Aloha. Welcome to the Live Ukulele Podcast. My name is Brad Bordessa. Thank you for tuning in to this first mini-series episode called Whole Steps, Half Steps, Baby Steps. I'm all about baby steps because a lot of times we try and do too much. We bite off more than we can chew, especially with music and practice, and we end up getting frustrated. So the whole idea with this episode, and hopefully a few to follow, it's not going to be all the time, but when I have a subject or a concept that kind of fits the umbrella theme, I'll be filing it here as one of these episodes. And we can kind of dive into looking at different ideas that kind of lend themselves to maybe more efficient or better practice, different ways of incorporating music smartly, or not necessarily smartly, but in a way that you haven't considered before that can be beneficial. So that's what we're dealing with here. Whole steps, half steps, baby steps. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about iteration and the benefits of how you can really get a lot more mileage out of material than you probably think just by tweaking some things here and there. Before we do that, though, just want to get a couple news items out of the way. First of all, Happy New Year, everybody. I am working here from a brand new desk that I built. Feels so nice to have a clean surface. I'm going to try and keep it that way. That's my New Year's resolution, is keeping my desk free from all of my many projects and receipts and tip money and all the music business things, tuners, metronomes that end up on my desk. It has a nice space for rack gear so I can be more organized when I need to go record something. I can just plug the mic right into the right bay and it'll go to the right piece of equipment. Gonna be great. Hopefully organize my life a little bit here in the studio and speed up kind of the workflow. Got a new order of Ukulele Chord Shapes print books coming in. Probably be here a week or two after this episode goes live. They take a long time to ship, but as long as they get here, that's the main thing. The first batch, I only have one left, which I think is really awesome. Thank you, everybody who has shown interest. I hope you're enjoying your copy that you've ordered. And if you don't have a copy, you haven't gotten one yet, or you want to get one for your friend or buy one for everybody in your ukulele club, reach out, let me know. But check out the link in the podcast description. I'll put a link to the checkout page where you can order a copy for yourself or for everybody in your ukulele club. Just a reminder that the Live Ukulele Podcast is listener supported. If you like what you hear, please head over to liveukulele.com, click on store, and check out some of my premium lessons and or ebooks. There's something for most every style of player. No matter what you're trying to learn, what you're working on, should be something interesting for you to learn in those lessons. And that is the best way to directly support the work that I put in to all of this free content that I provide for everybody. So thank you very much. And thank you for being here in this new season 5. Iteration is a noun. It means the version or incarnation or the action or a process of iterating or repeating. And that's what I want to talk about today. Because so often when I am teaching people or, you know, meeting people, talking story with them, what I hear a lot of them say is that they work on one thing, they do the one thing, they practice the one thing, and then they throw it all away and they start over with something different, something new. Like, oh, I'm learning the C scale. I'm learning to play the C scale. And then once they feel like they have learned the C scale, they stop practicing the C scale and they move on to learning the C sharp scale or something along those lines. And what I think that iteration is as a learning device as a way that you can improve more efficiently and faster is that basically you can continue building on what you have far further than most people expect. Okay? Let me just give you an example so we're all kind of on the same page as I talk this through. From the very beginning, we usually learn C, F, and G7. That's a really good example of something that is iterated well in ukulele practice. C, F, and G7. Because we continue to use those chords over and over and over. Even if you're a master player, you're still playing C, F, and G7. Because you learn the chords, your very first song, you're going to play Island Style or Waimanalo Blues or Mustang Sally, whatever it's going to end up being. And you learn the chords. And you strum them either with just a down, down, down strum, or maybe just down, up, down, up, down, up, chalang-a-lang strum. And that's great. And you get really comfortable with those. And for a few months, you just learn new songs and you play those chords and you're stoked. And then you go on and like, okay, I'm ready for a new strumming pattern. I'm going to up my game and learn down, down, up, up, down. First of all, always remember that your hand continues to move. Got podcasts on that. Got Groove Ukulele, my lessons on that whole idea. But down, down, up, up, down. Now you have a new strum. You play the new strum with C, F, and G7. You haven't changed the chords. The chords are still there. Okay, so maybe you've played another few more months and C, F, and G7 are starting to get kind of boring. Time for something new. Well, you can't get rid of C, F, and G7. Otherwise, you're going to be out of a bunch of songs. You won't be able to play those songs. So you still have to use those chords. And I think that's why this is such a well-iterated piece of music, is because you have to use it. There is no alternative. You have to somehow play C, F, and G7. That's basically part of the job as an ukulele player or as a stringed instrument player. So you learn a different version of C, F, and G7. You start by, okay, I'm going to learn a new way to play C. So you play the C bar chord up on the third fret. It looks like a B flat. You slide it up. And then you play F and G7 the same. You have added a new chord voicing. You have iterated upon the normal chords that you have been playing. And so on and so forth. You continue to build and build and build on top of this framework that you have established at a very basic level with those three main chords everybody uses and everybody continues to use. But when it comes to other things in music, we don't iterate very well. We don't tend to see that as an option. Because a lot of times, we're learning things kind of in a 2D way. You learn to play a song a certain way. That's it. That's the way you play the song. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think that you can, and this is one of the kind of one, maybe the one of the characteristic things about my teaching style, is I try and not start at step one every single time. I try and start off a concept or a class at step five. Not that you won't know what's happening because you don't know about steps one through four, but we can take steps one through four from other material that you already know. And that's the way I like to teach, is instead of starting from one every single time, we borrow pre-existing information and we build on top of that. We iterate on top of that so that we don't have to start so far back. We can kind of get a jump start on our goal of moving forwards through steps 10, right? If you start at step five, you only have five more to go before you get to step 10. Whereas if you start at one, you have to go the whole entire way. And so material is something that you can iterate and continue using over and over and over again, but people don't. And what I mean by this is that if you learn a song, maybe you're learning Scarborough Fair, something along those lines, and you have strummed the chords and you can kind of pluck out the chords and sing it, and you learned how to play the melody. And maybe you flip-flop back and forth between those. That's probably how you play the song, and that's probably how you will continue to play the song. However, if you were to take that Scarborough Fair and you build on it even more than you already have, there's so much to be gained. There's so much that you can add to the song, and so much that you can practice through changing the song and playing it in different ways. You can almost have like multiple versions of the same song, and each of those versions will help you learn a different skill. It's a different way to implement something new that you're practicing. Instead of learning a song and then in a year, like, oh, I should, you know, like kind of revisit, practice some songs, revisiting that same song in the same exact way and just playing it how you knew it, that doesn't necessarily reflect where you have gotten to in that year's time as a musician. There's a lot of new stuff that you've learned. There's a lot of new stuff that you can probably play now that you couldn't before. And going back to that song in the same way is fine. There's nothing at all wrong with that. You're just playing the song. But if you want to bring it up to date, you can use the song to be practicing the same things that you're working on now, currently. And that song is no longer an old piece that's kind of like in your repertoire, but sort of irrelevant to your current, the current leading edge of your progress. Instead, that song moves up to be part of that leading edge progress because you've updated it and brought new things to it that you're now working on. Okay. So say that song is Scarborough Fair, and back a year ago, you learned to strum the chords and sing it, and you also learned to pluck the melody. But now, a year later, you're starting to get into solo arranging and learning how to put things together. Maybe you're working through like The Ukulele Way by James Hill or something along those lines. You can take that song and combine those pieces and bring it up to date to provide kind of a sandbox for what you're currently learning. So if I take Scarborough Fair and instead of playing the chords and singing it or just picking the melody, now I try and play the melody with the chords and figure out a solo arrangement for that song. Now I'm exercising my brain using material that's familiar. I know the song super well because I've played it back then. I haven't forgotten it. You know, you don't like lose the tune in your head. Usually when you play a song to that extent, it doesn't just, you know, blow off into thin air and you lose the melody of the song in your head. Your fingers might not remember exactly what to play and that might be gone, but you know how the song is supposed to go. And a lot of times that's half the battle, is getting really familiar with how the song is supposed to go and knowing exactly what the rhythm should be, exactly what melody notes you're supposed to hit. And just understanding that inherently, even outside of the instrument, is half the battle. So by bringing this familiar song to the new concept that you're working on, you're going to be able to focus a lot more on how you execute the new concept, as opposed to, oh, I'm learning this new song. I'm learning Donkey Riding or whatever song from The Ukulele Way. You're thinking about that new song, trying to learn that new song, and certainly, you know, use the example songs that are given to you. But when you want to go above and beyond, don't necessarily feel like you have to do that same thing in a new song. Use an old song that you're already familiar with. You already know some of the stuff. Maybe you even know the chords and the melody separately, and then figure out how to bring them together for a new look at what's happening. To give you a more practical example, to kind of maybe put it all in perspective, I'll share something a little bit kind of personal that I'm working on along these lines with my band Kingside, kingside808.com. or at Kingside808. If you want to follow us, it's kind of a rock, hip-hop, reggae sort of band. We play a lot of different stuff, but certainly it's an interesting sort of a venue for an ukulele, and we get to rock out and play some loud, rowdy songs, and it's a lot of fun to be playing that kind of music with a great group of guys. Anyways, I have a song, Got Your Heart, that I've been playing for a super long time. You know, I'd play it back when I was performing solo. I would just strum the song and make it into kind of a groovy, sort of Jack Johnson-y acoustic sounding singer-songwriter song. It's by a guy named Anders Osborne out of Louisiana, fabulous guitarist. And I've played this song in several different ways over the years, and each time it kind of grows and changes and becomes more of its own thing and more representative of what's happening in my music at that time. So like back when I first learned it, I would just strum it as groovy as I could and sing the song, and that would be it. That was like my interpretation at the moment. And at the time, I was probably still getting comfortable singing. And so it was a good song where I was like really focusing on the singing part. Okay, sing it in tune, sing it with nice tone, sing it so it doesn't sound bad. That's what I was thinking about. Because I had played ukulele, I'd played those chords a million times. I was comfortable with that, but the singing was new. And then when Kingside first started out, many, many years ago, back when we had our first drummer, we would just, it was really more casual back then. It's kind of a real band now. But we got together and we created kind of some harmony parts and like arranged parts for the song. Because that's really what a band can lend to a piece, is you can have the instrumental variation and you have additional voices and you have a lot more tools kind of to build your little musical sandcastle with. And so we changed some things and added some breaks and some stops and some parts where everybody sang together. And that was kind of the next version. Because now I was more comfortable singing, I could think about arranging and creating kind of a different presentation of the same song. And now, just this week, I've been feeling like that song is fine, but it's kind of gotten old. It's like we've played it that way for a bunch of years, and now with the new band we're playing it every gig the same exact way. And you know, sometimes there's solos and it can be a little bit more abstract in that way, and we improvise a little bit, but for the most part it's the same sort of song that we were playing 5 years ago, same presentation. So in order to bring it up to date to kind of where the band is now and where, you know, I'm at now, I told the guys, like, hey, let's take this song and we'll work on it and let's work up a new version of it. I kind of was inspired by the composer, Anders Osborne. He's got a great video at the Bluebird Theater where he plays this. And it's a lot faster. It's more groovy, which kind of fits the feel for the band these days, is we're trying to be a little bit more of like a party band, one where people, you know, feel like, oh, let's get up and dance kind of a thing. And we want more fast paced, dancey songs. And so we can take this same song that's so familiar, change our presentation and iterate on that material and have something new, something that we're still familiar with, but is different, is musically inspiring. And I think altogether it creates more of a satisfaction with the music, with what we already have, and allows us to kind of move into the future with something that's fresh, and we don't have to get bored playing the same thing. Not that it's ever boring, but it's a little stale sometimes. And so we can freshen it up. Hopefully we'll be doing that at band practice this week. And off we go. We have iterated this song into a new form. Instead of getting rid of the old one and being, that song is like, we're tired of that song, we're just not going to play it anymore. Right? That's a waste of a song on our set list. And it's nice to have a bunch of options. And so now we have like the old version that we know very well. And hopefully now we'll have a new version that we can either choose to play or choose not to play and keep everybody inspired. So I've given some kind of big picture examples and ideas, but I think what's even more powerful when it comes to iteration and it comes to building slowly with these baby steps is real fine-tuned things. The super small things that you learn as you improve, the kind of things that really make the music breathe. Things like vibrato and the push and the pull of different timing feels and your tone and maybe your picking attack. The things that maybe by themselves aren't a big change, but when you start putting them together, the music really comes alive and it starts to feel like you know, real music that can be expressive and really say something. And so I want to give a few more examples because I think that's just the best way to do this. And with these, I'll actually play and try and kind of demonstrate what the iteration might sound like if you were actually playing through. And so you can hear kind of like the very bald, basic version, and then we will iterate through and make it more and more interesting and kind of more musical and more alive as its own sort of thing. Okay, so here's the first example that kind of comes to mind. It's a classic ukulele song that most people end up learning at some point or another. And it's certainly something that I've played a lot over the years in different ways, in different groups, solo. And I think that it'll be an interesting thing to kind of look at just from a playing perspective, because there's a lot that is happening here. And, you know, bear with me, I'm going to try and figure this out on the fly as we go, but hopefully it'll be kind of interesting to illustrate this example. And so this is Kavika, as done by the Sande Manoa, Peter Moon, on the ukulele. And so if you were just learning this for the first time, you know, just picking it off the album, listening to it, you're just going for the bare bones. You're playing it as basically as possible. And assuming that you're a little bit maybe newer to the instrument, you're not going to have as many built-in nuance things. Like if I pick something up and I play it, there's a lot that I bring to even something that I'm freshly figuring out that I don't know. Anything that I do play is going to have just kind of a signature touch to it that is a little bit more musical than when I first started out, you know, many, many years ago. And that is something that you will develop over time. But I'm going to try and play it just kind of as simply as possible. And then we're going to add pieces and pieces and pieces and see what we kind of end up with at the end. And then I'll try and maybe like go from very basic to kind of finished product, if you will. So you'd start off with something like this, just basic melody, no decorations, no vibrato, no special touch, just like real plain Jane, straightforward. Right. And so that's kind of clean, but there's also clean things that I didn't play as well. Like the first thing that comes to mind that would be like maybe the next step is to clean that up even more and to play that intentionally with less string noise, with less movement noise, and maybe with a nicer touch. So I'm not just pressing the note any old way. This isn't something that you can hear quite as much, but it's going to be really nice down the road when you practice in this way and you practice with a light touch in the correct fretting position. That's the kind of thing that allows you to play faster and play for longer because your hand won't get all tired. So it might sound like this. So that's kind of like maybe the cleanest that I can play it, aside from the harmonics that are ringing out and vibrating sympathetically on the G and the A string, maybe. But that's pretty straightforward. The next step, the next iteration, the next baby step would be to give it a little life. Right now, it feels kind of 2D and flat to me. So what you might do is you might add a little bit of vibrato and maybe a little push and pull in the phrase of the notes that you're playing. after that, maybe you're learning how to do some articulation kinds of stuff. You would start maybe adding like a hammer on and a pull off in there to kind of decorate some things, make it a little bit fancy and kind of improvise some of the movement around the riff. And then from there, you're kind of maxing out what you would probably do with a single note line. And, you know, the thing with iteration is that you have to do it responsibly because it is a very powerful tool. There's a lot you can learn and there's a lot of mileage you can get out of it. However, not everything needs to be reinvented and reinvented and reinvented a million times. Just because you can play it with vibrato and with a hammer-on and with varying dynamics in your phrasing and with the proper fret technique excluded. You should always try and do that. But you don't always need all of the extra things that you might iterate and iterate and iterate. You can practice those things so that they're in your bag and you can like, haha, wouldn't it be funny if I did this and I played the whole thing in pinch harmonics or whatever, where you go like that, that would be like another iteration and another step that's great if you're practicing that. But practically, is that how you want to present the song? And that might be cool. It's just an example. It's just a thought. But you've got to always remember that you can overdo things. And definitely with iteration, it is possible to go overboard. But probably when you practice, it is a good way to get the most out of it to go overboard. But just always remember to come back to that place of musicality where you can kind of honestly assess, like, is this for the betterment of the song or the piece? Or is this just because at this point I'm trying to beat a dead horse or I'm showing off or any of the other things that might come along with it? And that's just a matter of being honest. And everybody's going to have a different kind of line in the sand where they, okay, that's good. That feels right. That feels like enough. And some people are just going to go super crazy overboard. And I'm going to feel like, wow, that's a lot more than I feel like I need to hear. But for them, maybe it feels like the right amount of expression. Anyways, with that riff, the next thing that you might do once you've kind of tapped out on what you can do with just a single note lead is you start adding chords to it. So you're playing chords in between. And this, it's kind of solo. It's like fake solo arranging where you like play the chord and then you stop. You're like changing gears back and forth and back and forth. And you'll hear what I mean. You're just stomping on a chord, then playing the melody. Stomping on the chord, then playing the melody. And flip-flopping between those two is a challenge for a lot of people. That's a great way to practice getting in and out of those two different styles because you strum, then you pick. And a lot of people often wonder, well, how do I do that? How do I make the transition? And you really just have to work at it. But it's helpful if you're playing, you're working at it on something that you already know because you're not wondering, well, what is the timing for the melody? You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, da, 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 da. You know where it's supposed to go. You don't have to guess on that part. And you know that, like, oh, you rest on the one. And so in that place, I can put the chord strum. As opposed to just like learning it all from scratch and trying to do it at once. And this is kind of why I don't like prearranged tabs where there's like the whole part, everything is done for you. To me, that's confusing because I need to, in addition to knowing the song, I need to know what the arrangement is supposed to sound like. Granted, if I sight read better, you wouldn't necessarily have that problem, but I don't. And most people who play the ukulele don't read proficiently enough to like look at a piece and know how it's going to sound. And even so, a lot of times people who notate a song with that kind of full arrangement style, it's not perfectly notated. So their interpretation still might sound different rhythmically from what is happening on the page. So for me, I would rather just have a lead sheet. Show me what the chords are, show me what the melody is, and I, the musician, will interpret and translate them so that they become one performance piece, especially when coming up with like solo arrangement and stuff like that. It's easy to want the full tab with the solo arrangement, but if you haven't done the iteration yourself, it's really hard to understand what the heck is happening. And a lot of times, even though it's more simple, just figuring out how to put the lead melody with the chords is a lot better practice, and you can learn it a lot stronger if you start in that simple way, as opposed to jumping right in with like the full note for note transcription of "While My Guitar Gently Weeps." You just aren't going to get it as much if you go that route. Whereas if you sit and either learn it by ear, because you're also doing legwork in that sense, or you get the basic version down, like, okay, this is kind of how the melody goes. Okay, this is how the chords go. And you put it together, then you're doing the work, you're doing the iteration, and you're learning what's actually happening on the inside. So after you have your chord strums, maybe you want to transition into more of a less sledgehammer and scalpel approach to playing the song, where you like bash on the chord and then you stop and you finesse the lead line and then you bash on the chord. Maybe you try and let the chord ring out so that it kind of becomes part of the melody, a foundation for the melody. And that would be a little bit more typical solo arrangement where you let things ring. And that might sound something kind of like this. Right. So now you have kind of you're alternating bass picking and touching the strings in different ways around the melody. So you're filling everything out. And that would probably be like the end goal for maybe how much you could iterate in that way on that melody, like traditionally how you might hear it played. But you could take, for instance, I got my girlfriend a 60-sided die for her birthday 1 year. And with 60 sides, that's so many options. You could assign like a different musical idea to each of those, and you could roll the die, see what comes up, and you could iterate with that, whatever it may be. It could be any of 60 things, right? Maybe we're iterating the dynamics. Okay, so now I'm going to play it where I have adjusted the dynamics dramatically from what you might expect. It's usually kind of a loud thing. What if I play it super quiet, like it's a very gentle, like classical kind of piece? I'm just going to try it. And the whole thing kind of becomes like this whole different arrangement. The style completely changes. And I don't know how much you'll hear on the mic because it's hard to pick up super quiet stuff like that. But the feel changes. And by doing that, you don't necessarily want to play it that way, perform it that way. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. You have to decide musically what you're going after. But by practicing it and thinking about it, I don't have to think about playing Kavika. I don't have to think about what the chords are, what the melody is, because I know it. I've been playing it for 15 plus years. It's in my head. It's all there. What I'm thinking about is the musicality of, oh, what happens if I play it quiet? How does that change the presentation? What's another like musical buzzword that I could pull out of my head and just try? Well, like tapping, just for kicks. Like how would I execute this? I'm not a tapper. I don't practice tapping. Tapping's when you play with your right hand. You poke notes on the fretboard with your right hand and do hammer-ons and pull-offs with both hands. I don't normally do this. It's not my jam. But if I was, how would I do that? Right? I don't know what the heck I'm doing because that's not my thing, but it forces me to think outside the box. And with that iteration, I am teaching myself things musically that I otherwise wouldn't have thought about. And that's a really extreme example. Like, not many people are going to practically use tapping in their day-to-day because it just, why? What's the point? But when you dive in and you create kind of like synthetic guidelines for what you're trying to do, a lot of times you'll learn things and you'll discover things that you didn't know before. And really, this is kind of, I think, the heart of where some people succeed with music and some people struggle, is that some people will dig in and approach it with a question. What if I did this? Oh, what if I did that? How would this sound? How would that sound? And when you dive in and you experiment with those things, you really start to define music for yourself, what your style is, what works, what doesn't. And I find that a lot of times the folks that you have to like tell what to do, here, play this or try this, they go, oh, wow, that sounds so amazing. And they play it like that. And that's it. They take it for face value and never push it beyond. But I assure you that anybody that you like listen to, that you kind of like look up to and admire musically, there are people who are pushing and they're wondering, they're asking those why questions, like, why does it sound like this? What if I did it like this? What if I did it like that? Because there are no rules. And if you don't poke around and see what's in the neighborhood, you don't know what you have on offer, what is possible in that moment with that idea, with that concept or thing that you're working on. You just really can't know unless you try it, unless you iterate through it. And you can discover these things just like, okay, today I'm going to sit down and I'm going to take a D sharp scale and I'm going to play it, you know, over the five chord, and I'm going to play it with dynamics to get loud and then soft and then loud and then soft. And then the third bar, I'm going to tap. You could be that specific and figure something out that would probably be unique and you'd probably learn from it. But that's really overwhelming. That's a lot of legwork to think about. And you have to know a lot of different things to put the pieces together. Whereas if you iterate, you're only changing one thing at a time. And I think that's important, is you only iterate as much as you feel comfortable or as much as you can manage, let's say. Because when you're practicing, you don't want to feel comfortable. That's the whole idea of practice, is you practice what you don't know. You don't want to be comfortable. You want to be pushing your comfort zone. But you want it to be manageable. You want the challenge to feel not overwhelming, but like, oh, okay, I can work on this, but it's straightforward what you do have to work on. I think that's the important thing, is it's got to be straightforward. You have to know what you need to do and feel like, while maybe you can't do it at the moment, feel like you can do it at some point in the future. It's not unattainable. It's there. It's tangible what the result might end up being. But you have to kind of do that through trial and error. But most of the time, you're going to want to have that one iteration on whatever you're working on. You change it and adjust it. What if I did this? What if I did this? What if I did this? And so often we get stuck thinking about notes and chords and timing. Not enough people think about timing, but timing's kind of the last part of the triforce of music, if you will. But there's so many other facets of things, and this is where I would really encourage anybody who wants to really dive into music and get a better feel for it, check out The Groove Workshop by Victor Wooten. It's kind of old at this point. It's about bass. There's no ukulele, but it's about music, and it's about the different parts of music that most people don't think about. And all of the examples in that lesson are super profound. They're super interesting. It's super fun. It's a great watch. It's like a double DVD, if you can find something that still reads a DVD, very worth the $40 or whatever it is. I'll try and find it and put a link in the podcast description. But The Groove Workshop by Victor Wooten. It's kind of like his counterpoint practical lesson to go along with the music lesson. I think the chapters of The Groove Workshop and the music lesson are the same. It like talks about the same stuff in the same order. But super fascinating, and really gives you an idea that kind of the scope of expression that you're working with when you have music. And any of these things can be iterated can be brought to life in this extra way that you probably haven't thought about. All right, so that's it for this first edition of Whole Steps, Half Steps, and Baby Steps. I hope I don't get to the end of this and start editing it and go, why did I choose that name? But I think it's kind of catchy. Whole steps, half steps, baby steps. You don't get microtones, but you do get baby steps. Anyways, thanks for joining me here on the Live Ukulele podcast. It's published the first and third Saturdays of every month. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to my newsletter. I send out updates and interesting stuff and kind of alerts on the new content that I'm releasing. That's the best way to stay up to date. If you want to directly support the time that I put into free resources like this, go check out my premium ebooks and lessons at liveukulele.com/store. Greatly appreciated. So far, we're paying the bills. And I'll catch you in the next one. I think we have Craig Chi and Sarah Mizell in the next episode, so be sure you're subscribed. That was a fun conversation. They had a lot of good stuff to share. It was a really comfortable conversation. You know, some of them are like very businesslike, some of them are a little more off the cuff, and this one felt very familiar. They're lovely people and have a lot to share and do wonderful things in the ukulele community, so tune back in for that. Episode 3, it'll be February 3rd. Until then, be well out there. Keep on playing. Keep on expressing with your music. Don't be afraid to explore and try things and go, what would happen if I did this? That's the best question you can ask yourself. Find those things. Find those things you can iterate. And you will have success and you will have joy with your music. And you'll find a lot of cool stuff along the way. All right. Ah, hui ho.